Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Fortune magazine's annual ranking of the most powerful women in business, the list of all lists about female power in the United States, since its inception in 1998, has become Fortune's second largest franchise behind the iconic Fortune 500. And the woman behind that franchise, Patty Sellers. You probably know Patty Sellers as well from her profiles of powerful people as editor-at-large for Fortune magazine. She's written some of Fortune's most talked about cover stories, including Oprah's Next Act, Can Meg Whitman Save California, MySpace Cowboys, I Cannot Be Destroyed, about Martha Stewart, of course, Gone with the Wind about Ted Turner, and Oprah Inc. Patty also travels the country sharing her insights from those projects and the annual list. Next week, she's going to deliver the keynote address at the Women for Economic Leadership and Development Conference in Columbus. You might have seen a profile of her in the Women's Collective magazine by Takesha Shepherd Cheney, founder, CEO, and publisher of the women's book. Patty Sellers is with us now. Welcome to the show, Patty Sellers.
Thank you, Ann.
Question for our listeners, if you want to join the conversation, would love to know what you think the definition of power is in terms of women. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Patty Sellers, how do you define power for the purposes of that list?
Well, for the purposes of the list, and this is a different, I'm giving a different answer than what I would say to how do you define power personally.
Exactly.
But for the purposes of the Fortune Most Powerful Women list, four criteria: the size and importance of the woman's business in the global economy, the health and direction of the business, the arc of the woman's career, how quickly she's moved up and where she's likely to go from here, and the sort of most hard-to-measure criterion, which is social and cultural influence. But that's what puts Oprah high on the most powerful women list. You know, this was the first, when we started this in 1998, it was the first list that Fortune ever did. And Fortune was, by that point, kind of the king of lists, at least in terms of business magazines. It was the first list that Fortune ever did that was not done by sort of truly measurable, quantifiable, measurements like size of the business, which is the Fortune 500. That's the largest businesses in America, the largest public 500 largest companies in America. And then we do something called most admired companies, which is based on surveys.
Mm-hmm.
And when we decided to do this in 1998, it wasn't my idea, but I was a strong advocate for it. And I said, we got to rank them. And the editors, the top editors here said, how can we rank them? And I said, we sit around a table and we argue. And we develop criteria that's as objective as possible. And I said, it's the only way guys will read it. Only way guys will read
it. Yeah, I saw that in a New York Times article about it. You mentioned that, and that kind of cracked me up a little bit. Why is that?
Well, think about it. I mean, isn't every guy you know, aren't they into status and rankings and it's more largely from sports and growing up as a kid with, you know, I mean, the games that boys play as little kids are much more about, you know, much more strongly about winning and losing and ranking than, you know, I mean, girls are just trained to be more collaborative. And so, you know, guys are into, you know, who's number one. And guys think much more vertically, for lack of a better word, about their careers than women do.
And so you had to grab the guys with this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've been working on this over the last 15 years, but guys are the vast majority of Fortune's readers, and you know, we need to serve them. So, but this list is, we were really the first among the business magazines to come up with a most powerful women list, and now everybody seems to be doing it. But
is most powerful women, this is strictly business, right?
Yes.
It's not
and
politics, it's nothing.
It's not.
Okay.
And others have followed, and they've, you know, they've sprinkled in, you know, Angela Merkel and, you know, Hillary Clinton, and they, you know, they rank Hillary Clinton versus Irene Rosenfeld, the CEO of Kraft Foods, and we don't do that. I mean, we just think it's, I mean, first of all, Fortune's a business magazine, mm-hmm. and our most powerful women community is broader, and we have women in government and the arts and philanthropy, but for the purposes of the magazine and the ranking we do, it's pure business. And it's, you know, for-profit organizations, so we don't have Hillary Clinton on our list, and we don't have senators on our list. We don't have Melinda Gates on our list.
My guest is Patty Sellers, editor-at-large for Fortune magazine. We're talking about the most powerful women ranking that Fortune does every year for the last 15 years. If you have a question or comment for Patty Sellers, please give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. So did having to define it back then for such a ranking change your notion of power? Did it? What kind of conversations came out of that, sitting around the table and pounding it out like that?
Well, I mean, we first of all here at Fortune had to think about what is power. And, you know, we continue, I mean, we're 14 years into this, and we continue to kind of debate a lot about, you know, how Oprah Winfrey's power compares to, you know, the CEO of IBM. IBM appointed a new CEO January 1st, and right. It's a woman, Ginni Rometty. And, you know, sometimes the criteria I mentioned are, you know, it's kind of as measurable as you get. But, you know, if it's sort of like if we have a tiebreaker, here's the question I throw out. If you got back from lunch and you had two messages, Ginni Rometty, the CEO of IBM, called and Oprah Winfrey called, who would you call back first?
But when it comes to that, though, Patty, isn't there that star power that Oprah's like a celebrity.
Well, yeah, and that's her social and cultural impact.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't have a particularly, you know, big business compared to IBM or PepsiCo or Kraft Foods, some of these companies that women CEOs run. And, you know, she also has a business that, I mean, I did a cover story about Oprah in the fall of 2010 when she was just ready to launch her new network, and mm-hmm. she was really excited about that. She was taking probably the biggest risk of her life, definitely the biggest risk of her life. And, you know, she's really struggled to make it work. So we actually brought Oprah down on the list. I mean, she had more influence when she was doing a daytime talk show
because
mm-hmm. she had more eyeballs on her.
Simple as that. Javon?
Javon
in German Village, welcome to the show.
Yeah, I would like to agree, Oprah Winfrey, by the way, I was over hearing that, you know, she's amazing. I mean, she's like the perfect American story. You know, she came from nothing and built something quite amazing to reach out to as many people as possible. I think that's wonderful. And, you know, and the thing is that women being, you know, having a list of powerful women is no surprise to me. I'm actually shocked that it hasn't happened sooner. I mean, if you look back in history, some of the most, like, all the way back to, like, Joan of Arc, I mean, people, like, women especially, have a much better sense of reaction to things. You know, like, men, like, kind of jump the gun. I mean, you got your Napoleons and you got, like, your Mussolinis and these crazy, awful people. In
wow, pick out some real bummers
there. You know, like, some real bummers.
You haven't even mentioned Hitler.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I don't even want to go there. And so, like, you know, you got all these really, like, extravagant people who have made their name in history, but there are great women out there that no one even has any idea about, you know. There's just such great, like, that have changed the world, you know, and it's really surprising to me that it hasn't, like, really taken off sooner. And like the big fad, what the I'm sorry, not fad, but the fade into what we're into now. Like I was thinking, you know, it's like more of a cycling ability. Like you were rolling downhill and just building up more and more speed. And it would be no surprise to me that women would end up being more of a presidential figure in our society in the future. Like I could, you know, just because of the reaction that women have as opposed to the way that men have. Men want to blow up and take action right away, whereas it shows in history that women kind of sit back for a moment, take in all the facts, they weed out the nonsense, and then achieve it. I mean, that's why, you know, most women are raising children. You know, like, you don't really want a bunch of crazy, you know, men that blow up all the time raising their kids.
Another interesting observation. Hang on, Javon. Let's hear what Patty Sellers has to say.
Well, first of all, you sound like a really evolved guy, and that's terrific. And I don't want to discount men. I mean, you know, it's interesting. There are only 18 female CEOs still in the Fortune 500, and something interesting happened last week. We were betting, a lot of people were expecting, that the next CEO of Johnson & Johnson would be a woman, Sherry McCoy. And they picked her male rival instead. I mean, basically, it was a bake-off between these two contenders for the CEO job. And, you know, what happened there was that this ex-military guy, he was an Army Ranger for 6 years. He went to West Point, and he was in the Army and, you know, doing really tough stuff. And, you know, and this woman, Sherry McCoy, who is so popular inside of J&J and has runs a bigger piece of the company than this guy, Alex Gorsky, who got the job, does, she didn't get it. And the reason she didn't get it is because J&J is in bad shape right now. I mean, they've had a lot of product recalls, manufacturing problems, distribution problems, quality problems, and they need like a really, really tough manager. So this environment where, I mean, I think you're right that, you know, guys kind of, I mean, guys, women tend to be more collaborative, and guy, I mean, this is a little bit of a stereotype, but, and guys tend to be more like, you know, aggressive, go for it, and in this difficult environment, women do not have, you know, I think women are a little bit of a disadvantage because, I mean, they're great. I mean, Anne Mulcahy turned around Xerox, brought it back from the brink, and now Xerox has another female CEO, first time in Fortune 500 history that a woman succeeded a woman. And now the CEO is Ursula Burns, who actually has sort of an even tougher reputation than Anne Mulcahy. But they're both very collaborative managers who are, you know, who are turnaround champs. But I'll tell you, that combination of being really tough, a turnaround person, and super collaborative, that's a really rare thing.
My guest is Patty Sellers, editor-at-large for Fortune magazine. We're talking about the ranking of the most powerful women. If you have a question or comment for her, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, or you can tweet me at @AnnFisherWOSU. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Mike Pesca, coming up on the next On Point. The NYPD is in a world of trouble for sending spies into local mosques. We look at the controversy and at what they found. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. 52 degrees with sunny skies, mostly sunny today, a high near 55. Partly cloudy for tonight, a low of 26 degrees. Increasing clouds for Tuesday, but still a warm day with a high near 50.
Support for 89.7 comes from OSU's John Glenn School of Public Affairs, offering continuing education and graduate degree programs designed for the working professional. More information at glenn.osu.edu.
All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
My guest is Patty Sellers. She's editor-at-large for Fortune magazine, written some of Fortune's most famous cover stories. We've been talking earlier about Oprah. She wrote the cover story Oprah's Next Act and also Oprah, Inc. So if you have a question or comment for Patty, we're talking about Fortune's annual ranking of the most powerful women in business. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. An email from Lauren. She writes, I read the article of Pat Sellers in the Collective for Women magazine, and she mentioned in her interview that there was a significant increase in the number of female CEOs last year. I was interested in knowing if she could provide an explanation or factors that are contributing to that growth.
I wish I knew. It was a very odd thing that happened in a span of about 6 months. We went from 12 to 18. Women CEOs, and as I said last week, I thought it was going to be 19, but Sherry McCoy did not get the CEO job at J&J. In that period last year, Carol Bartz was ousted as the CEO of Yahoo, and a bunch of women. I mean, actually, Ginni Rometty was one, the new CEO of IBM, who started on the job January 1st. But most of the others were not really big name companies. You know, it's a sign of gradual progress. A lot of people think that, you know, that women aren't making any progress. And I don't think so. The last half of 2011, we went from 12 to 18. That's fantastic. We're not going to go from 18 to 24 in 2012. I mean, I really thought, I think that was an anomaly last year. But what is happening, as people say, that there's a thicker glass ceiling, there's a leakier pipeline, that's not true, because we're getting the gradual progress on the number of female Fortune 500 CEOs, and when we started the Most Powerful Women list in 1998, it took about $1 billion in revenues to get onto the list. Today, it takes about $6 billion to get onto the list. So, meaning that number 50 on the list, and it varies because, as I said, you know, Oprah has like a $1 billion business, over a billion, but in that range. Mm-hmm. And we have her last year at, she used to be in the top 10. We moved her down to number 16 last year. But, you know, Oprah has this unbelievable social and cultural influence globally that vaults her up the list. But for the most part, you know, kind of women who don't have the social impact that she does, for the most part, if you're number, you know, 49 or 50 on the list, you probably are overseeing about a $5 or $6 or $7 billion business. And that's, you know, that's just eons beyond what it was 10 years ago.
So you're measuring it in different ways. It's not that there's so many more women, but they're managing so much more.
Yeah, and you know, when we started the list in 19, when we started the Most Powerful Women list in 1998, there was one, maybe two female Fortune 500 CEOs. Jill Barad was the CEO of Mattel, and she soon got ousted after that. Today, you know, we have, there are 18 female Fortune 500 CEOs. Not all of them have made our Most Powerful Women list, but we have at least a dozen CEOs on our most of public companies on our most powerful women list, and the women running those businesses are running far, far, far bigger businesses than women CEOs were running in the late 90s. I mean, we have Meg Whitman, who's the CEO of Hewlett-Packard now. We have Ginni Rometty, who's the CEO of IBM. I mean, it's amazing. Like, when people say, oh, women aren't making it in tech, that's a ridiculous statement, because the two biggest tech companies in America are headed by women. Now, most people don't realize that, but Meg Whitman at HP and Ginni Rometty at IBM.
To what extent is the selection process for CEOs driven by the makeup of the board of directors?
Well, it's a really good question. Women make up only about, I think it's about 16% of Fortune 500 board seats. And, you know, it's the boys' club still operates, and men like to promote people in their own image, and there's always the sort of overlay of, you know, like not so much sexual harassment issues, but it's just not that cool for a guy to invite an up-and-coming woman executive out for a golf game on Saturday. And so women are left out of those networks that are really, really important to get ahead. And yes, women can form their own networks, and that's really important, and it's going to be increasingly important as women move up. But, you know, it doesn't help as much as the guys' networks.
Well, and that assumes, that as far as the golf game goes, that the country club or wherever allows women to play on Saturday mornings.
Well, I think is that really an issue today? I don't know that. Are you serious? Is that an issue?
Yeah, I think it's an issue. Huh. Not everywhere, but I think it's changing a lot. But, yeah,
okay.
I think it still is an issue.
At Augusta, but yeah. I don't know beyond that.
Well, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and my guest is Fortune Magazine's editor-at-large, Patty Sellers. Merrill in Victorian Village, you're on the air, Merrill.
Hi, I'm calling in to say that I think that power, I would define it, as coming from the self. The people are the vehicles of change in society and personally. So I feel that power comes from inside more than anything else. And I wanted to say that as a male calling in, I would like to hear from a lot more female voices on this topic.
I would too, Merrill. Thanks for that suggestion. But Patty Sellers, what do you make of that comes from within? Is there something intangible like that you also feel from somebody who's
absolutely
very powerful?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm curious, where are you from in the South?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you there. What was that?
Where are you from in the South?
Oh, I'm not from the South.
Oh, I thought you said coming from the South.
Oh, coming okay. From the point of view of a man.
Okay.
Yeah, that I would like to hear more women's voices, and I appreciated Lauren's email.
That's nice. That's great. Boy, all these guys who are listening to this show are so evolved. I'm really impressed. This is great.
It's public media. What can I say?
So the idea of it coming from within, I love that. I think it's more important than ever in the business world, because there is so little corporate loyalty either way today, and companies aren't – your employer isn't loyal to you. Fewer and fewer people are loyal to their employers, you know, largely because of the economy, but also because people can just do their jobs from any place. And that physical freedom, I think, frees a lot of people up kind of psychologically to do their own thing. And, you know, there's all this stuff written about kind of building your own personal brand and all that. And this, I think this all ties together in sort of forcing you to recognize that your power is really within you. And if you rest your power in an organization or an infrastructure, you don't know that that infrastructure is going to be there tomorrow. I mean, the world is so unpredictable today, and it's changing faster than we've ever seen. And we don't really know, like, you know, if you – I'm so against the idea of the career ladder because, you know, if you think of your career as a ladder, you don't have peripheral vision. You're looking at the next rung, and that next rung may not be stable, you know, 6 months from now. We don't know where the world is going, and we don't know what industries are going to be hot. So I really encourage people to think about their careers more as jungle gyms, and you keep your peripheral vision, and you swing to an opportunity over here, over there, and you just don't know where it's going to come from, and you need to stay open. And, you know, I think the idea of personal power, power from within, is more important than ever. You know, it's like what you do, it's like what your value is and what you do if your job is taken away from you tomorrow. What power do you have if you lose your job tomorrow? And it makes you really rethink your life and your career.
Meryl, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. If you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513. And you can also email us, as did Hal. He writes, I'm fascinated to hear your guest limit the framing of powerful women to those in for-profit corporations. I'm wondering how your guest feels about Fortune's mission at a time when there is a national debate over public corporate employment, as in privatization.
We limit the rankings to for-profit, women who work for for-profit companies. But that doesn't mean the most powerful women community is just about that group. We have a number of, you know, we started as a list in the magazine, and it's really become a community. We have events throughout the year. We have a huge summit with 400 women, and Warren Buffett comes every year, and which is, he's sort of our honorary guest every year. But those are women from business, philanthropy, the arts, media, education, government. And the best thing we've done in this community, and the thing I'm proudest of, is getting these women to think about power more broadly and think about power beyond their job description. And we have a number of programs that are basically, you know, kind of revolve around that. And the most successful one we have is a program that we partnered with the U.S. State Department in 2006. And they reach out to their embassies around the world and help us bring about 25, 30 women to the United States every year, rising star women from developing countries across the world. And they come for the month of May, and then they shadow women from our most powerful women community who, you know, want to not just teach them, but learn from them. And they share ideas. And then these young women, mostly in their 30s, go back home, and where we have various incentives to get them to pay it forward back at home. But, you know, so many women have done, you know, big name women, Ellen Coleman, the CEO of DuPont, Ursula Burns and Anne Mulcahy, the two CEOs in succession at Xerox, Pat Wirtz, the CEO of ADM. So many women, Tori Burch is doing it this year. So many women from our most powerful women community have done this. And it's all about, you know, it's all about using your power more broadly and to make the world a better place. And that's what jazzes me about this. I mean, ranking these women is in the magazine is, you know, it's great. It's a great franchise. But honestly, that's not what excites me.
I was going to say, you've interviewed some amazing people over the years. I mean, absolutely amazing, and there's not enough time. But I wonder how much more interesting those conversations must be at those gatherings and the different events that have come about because of the list.
Well, it's, you know, there are so many women's conferences now, and the Most Powerful Women's Summit, I mean, I'm very proud to say that we're in the lead, and, you know, I think we're stronger than ever, and already we have about half of the so-called list women, the women who were on our 50 Most Powerful Women list in 2011, about half of that group has already signed up to come to our conference in October, which is in California. And it's, you know, these women are so busy, and they, you know, most of them have families, and they pull themselves away for one major conference a year. And we're lucky enough that this is the one that they tend to prioritize. And it's a real, I mean, we make sure that we have it in a setting, and we make sure that we sort of set the tone and the mood to make it a let your hair down, let loose, relax, let's be totally candid with each other kind of conversation. And we've had, you know, we've had conversations on stage there that have been so, you know, kind of so revealing, and it's fascinating to me to see these women, you know, kind of get like vulnerable on stage. And I think, you know, they feel anybody can do a business conference. You know, I mean, there are tons of business conferences, but, you know, I think what we try to do is we try to sort of humanize these so-called most powerful women.
A Washington Post article referred to one of your first high-powered interviews with Liz Claiborne, and you found her cold and terse, I think were the two words used, and a reflection of the image.
The late Liz Claiborne. I'm glad she's not alive to repeat what I said.
Well, I mean, that's a reflection of the image women were forced to embrace to appear powerful, and I wondered, have powerful women, besides the behind closed doors at the event, have powerful women let their guards down? Are they easier to talk to now?
Yes, they are. You know, I've been at Fortune since 1984. Mm-hmm. And back in the 80s and back in the 90s, I started writing about quote-unquote powerful women in the mid-90s. But back in the 80s and the 90s, the women who tended to get to the top were really aggressive, often flamboyant, kind of look at me kind of personalities. And that's how they got to the top. They stood out. And that's often how they fell, because they brought so much attention to themselves and were often egotistical, really egotistical. I mean, every CEO is egotistical, right? But really egotistical. And so they would, you know, the fall from grace would be pretty dramatic, and they were even more in the spotlight because they were fewer and far between. And so Carly Fiorina became the CEO of Hewlett-Packard in 1999. She was the first number one woman on our Most Powerful Women list in 1998, and we put her on the list at number one, our inaugural list, in 1998 when she was running the biggest division at Lucent. At the time, huge and very hot and profitable telecom company. Mm-hmm. So within a year after we put her on at number one on the list, and hardly anybody outside the telecom industry had ever heard of her, HP selected her as their next CEO, and she lasted a few years. She lasted like 4 years. And she eventually got fired. And, you know, there were all sorts of strategic issues with HP, and HP has been struggling ever since, and now Meg Whitman is trying to turn it around. But, I mean, one thing that made Carly Fiorina vulnerable is she very much became sort of, she put herself out there in a very forward, aggressive way, becoming the face of of HP, and it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, especially at what has always been a hugely sort of democratic and collaborative culture at Hewlett-Packard. So it was a moment. It was a moment when she got in trouble in 2002, 2003, and then the next, so we moved her off the list about a year before she got fired. I mean, we moved her out of the number one position, mm-hmm. and we replaced her at number one with Meg Whitman, who was running eBay at the time. And Meg was as different from Carly as you could imagine. And Meg is tough and aggressive and, you know, certainly has an ego, but she's very down to earth and very, I mean, they literally used to call her mom at eBay. And then Ann Mulcahy at Xerox, hugely sort of collaborative and, for lack of a better word, normal, not fancy, not highfalutin, manager, CEO, turned around Xerox. And there was this sort of new wave of women who were running Fortune 500 companies who you could actually, like, imagine sitting at the kitchen table with and having a cup of coffee. And, you know, we still have the sort of shooting superstars today. I mean, it's interesting. Indra Nooyi had been number one on our list for a few years, and we moved her into the number two position last year because her company, PepsiCo, is not doing so well. Mm-hmm. But Indra is struggling a bit now. I mean, she's been a great CEO, but she is so kind of out there and the face of PepsiCo. Hmm. Now since PepsiCo's fortunes have stumbled a little bit, she's being accused. That's what happens when you make yourself the face
right.
of the brand. It's all the CEO's fault, all the more so when you become the image of the company.
My guest, Patty Sellers, editor-at-large for Fortune Magazine, will return after this. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Journalist Craig Timberg says for years, international AIDS groups overlooked important factors in the spread of the HIV virus, like the effectiveness of circumcision.
The difference between the men who were circumcised and the men who weren't was 8-1 in terms of their infectiousness.
On the next Fresh Air, Timberg explores the history of the virus and efforts to fight the AIDS epidemic. His new book is Tinderbox. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in less than 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And your support of our station right now keeps the programs you enjoy on the air and free of commercials. A basic membership starts at just $60. As a basic member, you'll receive the WOSU member card, good for dining discounts at more than 200 member card partners. Also, a one-year subscription to Newsweek magazine. Make your first-time gift or renew your membership. Become a basic member today. Visit WOSU.org, and thanks for your support.
Support for 89.7 comes from St. Joseph Montessori School, presenting Dr. Michael James Dorer, speaking on the 10 most important features in Montessori education, Wednesday evening, February 29th. Reservations at sjms.net.
53 degrees with sunshine, mostly sunny skies today, a high near 56 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight, dropping down to a low of 26. Increasing clouds for Tuesday with a high near 50. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We are talking about women in power with one of the creators of Fortune Magazine's annual Most Powerful Women in Business ranking, Fortune Magazine editor-at-large Patty Sellers. She'll deliver the keynote address at the Women for Economic Leadership and Development Conference in Columbus next week. For more information about that, go to weldoh.org, or you can visit our website at wosu.org/allsides. We'll have a link to that for your hopefully more convenient for you. Patty Sellers, in a January Newsweek article about the head of the International Monetary Fund, Christine Lagarde, The writer said that in a post-feminist world, whatever that is, where women populate the global ranks of CEOs, prime ministers, and presidents, she is among the leaders who are not in their positions because of their gender, or who are not in spite of it, who are, and I was wondering how many women are in those positions because of their gender, if ever, at least anymore.
Those positions meaning Fortune 500 CEOs positions or had, positions in government? And
do you think do you think there's a big difference ultimately?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that in politics, I remember Nancy Pelosi saying to me years ago, this was, 2003 or so, I interviewed her before she was Speaker of the House, long before she was Speaker of the House. And she said to me that she thought women would advance more quickly in government than in corporate America because it's the people voting. And of course, you know, what are we at now? 52% of the population is female.
Right.
But I do think that in politics, in any elected office, you know, you're voting more for the woman. It's more gender. It's people think about gender more often. I think in corporate America, I think it really does. When you're talking about a CEO of a Fortune 500 size company, I think it comes down to talent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think women can be discriminated against on the way up, and some of the things we talked about earlier, which is not, you know, blatant direct discrimination, but it's being left out of networks that, you know, help get you ahead and all that, and the natural bias of a male-leaning board or male-leaning top management wanting to promote people in their own image. It's very unintentional. But I think when a board is deciding between two people, say, to be the next CEO, it shouldn't come down to we want to appoint a woman. There's a really interesting concept called the glass cliff. And it's the idea that companies in pursuit of diversity goals promote women ahead of their abilities, sort of like the Peter principle. And that happens. I mean, that happens below the CEO level. One place that happened was Lehman Brothers, which really wanted to beef up its female management and put a woman named Erin Callen into the CFO job a couple years before Lehman went Chapter 11. And it's not her fault, and possibly any male CEO CFO could not have made a difference in the company. But she was not equipped for the job and not ready for the job. And that company, top management at Lehman Brothers, really wanted to put a woman in the job. And it really sort of shaded their judgment. So that does happen. But I don't think that happens when you're, you know, deciding on a CEO.
Carol in Plain City, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
I just had wanted to say, you're talking about power. You're talking about power and women embracing their power. You tell me what power. After this impossible scene in the last 2 weeks with women, we don't even have rights over our sexual organs yet. They have, panels of men in black frock coats and suits telling us what to do and discussing it. I was infuriated. A lot of women are infuriated. And you know what? I guess a lot of the kids today, you know, so like, what are we fighting for? I mean, you know, you're talking about climbing into business. We can't even take care of what goes on behind our bedroom doors. I'm just infuriated. And my newest hero is Jon Stewart of The Daily Show, because he's been making fun of these. He showed that panel of black priests and all these guys dressed in black, telling us what's discussing it. No women can even discuss this, the most important private part of their lives. I'm sorry.
No, you don't have to apologize, Carol. But thanks for that. Let's hear what Patty Sellers has to say, though. Okay.
Well, I think I'm gonna steer clear of that. I'd rather stick with the workplace and Fortune 500 boardrooms, frankly.
But when you're behind the closed doors and at these events, are these issues brought up at all?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, sort of religious issues, and I mean, no.
Well, we could take birth control, for instance, and what kind of coverage women get in their health plans.
We really haven't gone there in our Most Powerful Women's Summit, and this whole controversy around that kind of exploded after our last Most Powerful Women's Summit was in early October. So that was before all of this controversy exploded. Okay. And I just don't really want to go there, frankly.
Sure.
It's not my area of expertise,
shtick.
And I don't care to share my view.
Okay. Gabriel in Delaware. Welcome to the show, Gabriel.
Hi. Thanks. It is so great you're having this show, and I think it is an important topic to think about. And one issue that I think is interesting to chew on is that business power. I have a business, and business power is often typically awarded to somebody based on a paradigm that's structured in a way that precludes women, that's really based on a male-gendered value system. And there are a lot of issues, you know, like there's a double standard of women who could say the same thing as a man, but, you know, they would be judged differently by their colleagues or by their subordinates. And then there's a big support system for men, oh, let's say even who are parents, who are, you know, to not be present at school events or not make the school snack and that sort of thing. And whereas the same business women in the same position would be more judged or have more power, pressure on them. And I think that's something that as a culture is interesting to think about how we're judging what is power and what's rewarded when we're actually giving sort of these lists or these senses of awards to say these are the best ones, when it's very complicated as a gender role thing. And it just seems like the glass ceiling is so thick, partially because we keep kind of looking through the same Alice in Wonderland looking glass, you know, that we keep judging these things on extreme gender roles.
Patty?
Well, it's all the more important that women represent more than two or three members of, you know, of the board in large companies, in large organizations. And, you know, the more women we get running major, major companies, the better, you know, the greater chance the rules will change. I mean, guys and women, young guys and young women are becoming more alike than they used to be in terms of values, social values, workplace values, and that's a really good sign. I mean, we're headed in the right direction. I mean, I don't think the glass ceiling is not getting thicker. Women are gaining power in corporate America, and we're just not at the tipping point yet. And I'm not sure what the tipping point is, but we're moving toward it. And you know, I think the recession complicates it. And early on in the recession, men were losing jobs. You know, they were calling it a man session. Men were losing jobs more quickly than women were. And now the opposite is happening as, you know, kind of a lot of the male jobs are, you know, just men are back to filling those positions that they lost. So, a more buoyant economy would of course help both genders, but I think it would help women even more. And, you know, we just have to keep moving forward. It's slow, but it's getting better.
Thank you, Gabriel, for that call. We appreciate it. Email from Jeanette. She says, I worked for Ginny Rometty at IBM back in the early 1990s. Ginny was a large systems marketing manager in Detroit with IBM and had staff in Michigan and Ohio. She had a drive that was so focused and intense that none of us could keep up with her. We all received voicemail messages from her at 2 a.m. on a regular basis. Her staff concluded that none of us could ever work fast enough, smart enough, or long enough to make her happy. When she moved on to her next promotion, we all were laying dead in the aisle. Aisles to this day and to this day laugh about working for Jenny. She is a force to be reckoned with, but crushed all of the folks she worked with.
Oh, my goodness.
What do you think of that?
That's amazing.
Whoa.
Jeez. I don't know what to say. I mean, she's intense. She's tough. Sam Palmisano, her predecessor at IBM, he was, you know, frankly accused of the same sorts of managerial behavior, and he did a really great job turning around IBM. I mean, a lot of the people listening to this show probably aren't old enough to remember how on the edge IBM was back in, you know, like 20 years ago before Lou Gerstner came in and turned the company around. And talk about a tough boss. He is one of the all-time toughest bosses in America. And then we had Sam Palmisano, who was a bit gentler, and now we have Ginny Rometty, who, I've heard these kinds of stories about Ginny, and hopefully she, you know, can build inspiration at the same time that she's driving people, and it's a great company, but that's, you know, I mean, she's seen these letters. I mean, I know she's seen letters. We did I did a blog post about her. Sometime last year. I have a blog called Postcards, and you can read it at Fortune, www.fortune.
We'll post a link on our website.
Fortune.com/postcards. Fortune.com/postcards. And I did a post about Ginny Rometty. Got so many comments about what a hard-driving boss she is. And she actually was interviewed at our Most Powerful Women Summit in October before it was known that she was going to be the next CEO of IBM. And my favorite line from last year's summit was hers, which is, growth and comfort cannot coexist.
Well, that it sounds just like her now that I'm getting to know her a little bit.
It does.
Well, Patty Sellers, thank you so much for sharing an hour of your time with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks, Dan. I really enjoyed it.
Patty Sellers, she is the Fortune Magazine's editor-at-large. She will deliver the keynote address at the Women for Economic Leadership and Development Conference in Columbus next week. For more information about that, go to weldoh.org or visit our website at wosu.org/allsides, and we'll post a link to Patty's blog as well. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.